It was clear months ago, well, 4 years ago, really, that nothing about the 2020 presidential election was going to be easy. Even without a pandemic, a cratering economy, millions more mail-in ballots, and everything else, Donald Trump was never going to go without a fight.
It's a very sad moment. To me, this is a very sad moment. And we will win this. And we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won it. So I just want to thank you.
As I record this, it's the day after the election. There are still millions of ballots being counted right now. And Joe Biden appears to have a slight edge, but he's not calling anything yet.
It's clear that we're winning enough states to reach 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency. I'm not here to declare that we've won, but I am here to report when the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners.
Meanwhile, Americans on both sides are complaining or freaking out or yelling at each other on social media, mostly. But at least so far, and I don't say this lightly at all, so far they aren't shooting. So where does America go from here when all this is decided? Will that be today, tomorrow, December? What will the rest of the world do in the days and weeks to come before whichever president wins is sworn in on January 20th? And what should Canada do to be ready for whatever comes next? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Balkan Devlin is a senior fellow at the McDonald Laurier Institute and a super forecaster for Good Judgment Incorporated. Hello, Balkan.
Hello.
My first question is based on what we've seen of the election so far, not talking about the results here, just the process. Are you more optimistic than the last time we had you on the show when we talked about some pretty dangerous potential outcomes?
Well, I don't think we are out of the woods yet in that sense. I am more optimistic in the sense that we didn't see any major or any at all disruption of the sort of voting process itself. So that's a good thing. But you know, there are three at least states that are not clear yet. If you at Arizona and Nevada, you go up to five. And we don't know whether the court challenges would come. And with that, what kind of protests would go. But in one sense, the process of the election was smoother. So that at least is out of the way. But the next couple of days will be quite crucial in how this would proceed.
As you watch this, what do you think about how the results we're seeing are being interpreted and spun and et cetera, et cetera? Because this is kind of the scenario that we've all talked about for months, that it would take days after the election for all these votes to be counted. And yet it's still being declared by President Trump and others are saying, you know, well, stop the votes.
Well, we were expecting that anyway. I mean, remember when we were talking about it and writing that the probability of this would end up in a particular way and that Trump would more likely to go to courts to ensure that the counting stops and when he's ahead. What I think is more surprising is that the Biden campaign seems to get a good hold of the narrative by getting ahead of this. You know, his very brief speech that they are on track without saying that, you know, I won, but, you know, given how it goes, we are on track. So just stay calm and continue with the vote counts and so on and so forth. All suggest that they do have a good sense that how to shape the narrative moving forward is extremely important in how this whole recounting things, which will come. I mean, there will be court challenges, at least in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. I have no doubt that we would go there. But going to that vote recounts and the court challenges, that the narrative being shaped is that this is normal, this would take some time, we need to count this has nothing to do with fraud and so on and so forth, is extremely important. And Biden, the campaign, seems to be ahead of the game, shaping the narrative. I don't think at this stage today, Trump campaign was successful in casting a doubt on the voting process. So I think that is an important development.
If you're on the Biden team right now or in that war room, what kinds of scenarios are you gaming out over the next few weeks?
If I were to do that, I would first see in what states and what particular counties that the Trump team would want to sue to stop votes being counted or torn out because they were posted after the election or they're missing this or missing that. So I try to think as carefully as possible what will be the procedural ways in which the Trump team would try to take this to the local courts, the state level, and then to the Supreme Court, hoping that he would come out of ahead of this by stopping the count or disqualifying certain number of mail-in votes. So that would be the thing I would definitely focus on. Another one is that what would Trump team administration would do if those low level court challenges fail and fail quickly? Would he continue to declare the election being stolen by the Democrats? Would he call upon his supporters to protest, so on and so forth? So I would go ahead and try to see what kind of things can be done on the Trump side if I was on the Trump team, kind of thing. And the third thing I would try to game out is that if those two tactics don't work, what would the Trump administration do during the transition? What kind of roadblocks can be thrown out there and how we might, in that sense, if I was in the Biden team, would make sure that there's not much damage during the transition. So those three things I would definitely, try to game out and see in what ways Trump would try to take this all the way to the Supreme Court and how that can be stopped.
In a few minutes, I'm going to get you to walk through what a Biden presidency or a Trump re-election, if that's still possible, would mean for Canada. But if you're Canada right now and you're the Liberal government, what are you thinking as you're watching this? And do you do anything, or is now the time to just shut up and wait and see?
I think it's time to shut up and wait and see. There is no real advantage of jumping right now and declaring one way or the other. I think the smart way to do is to use typical platitudes and vague statements such as we are waiting for the election process to be complete. It is too early to talk about this. It is important that we respect the process, etc., etc., and hope that we will not end up having to make a choice if this gets a lot uglier. But I think that right now the time is just duck and cover and whistle and wait until this is over.
If the current results, as they seem now, hold up and we are looking at a Biden presidency, what changes does that mean for Canada specifically? I mean, aside obviously from hopefully a better handling of COVID-19, what else would be impacted?
If we end up having a Biden presidency, the one thing that will probably change in a significant way is the cosmetics of it, the way sort of Biden handles international affairs, including relations with allies. But in terms of the substance of the things that Canada should care about, two fundamental things, whether the U.S. continues to play a leading role in the international order and its maintenance, and the second is how Biden administration will be paying attention to free trade and what their approach would be. I wouldn't expect, apart from the surface changes in how these things are carried out, in the fundamental dynamics, I wouldn't expect much of a change. I would still expect in the Biden administration, the United States being more focused inwards because this polarization is not going anywhere. And that would require Canada to continue to need to develop our own a more active and independent-minded, perhaps, foreign policy. And in trade, the people have been pointing out that the Biden program would include, several billion, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of, Buy American promises and so on and so forth. That's America First without the name. And that would be a lot more protectionism going on. So Maybe there won't be any, you know, Twitter fights and, you know, like the Trump did, and you know, Canadians are treating us terribly sort of rhetoric. But that will be quite a tough set of negotiations and whatnot. So I think there are fundamental trends within American politics that would continue even under a Biden administration. Now, one thing for sure, it will be done in a more smiling way, in a more, you know, collegial way, perhaps, and perhaps with a bit more attention to what the allies are thinking and what their interests are. But if, you know, if you're hoping that, you know, we could go back to our you know, slumber in terms of international affairs, and think that, you know, the Americans would take care of it, they will maintain this open international system, and we'll have complete free trade with them, and we're comfortably fine with that. Well, that's not going to happen even under a Biden administration.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to ask you about what happens after this. I mean, obviously, Trump is still in office now. Even if he loses, he's not gone till January 20th. But if that happens, what will his legacy be on American foreign policy, on America's relationships with its allies around the world? Will they shrug this off as a one-term thing? Has there been lasting damage done? What happens?
Cosmetically, that will be some change. But I think the lasting impact of Trump on international affairs are twofold. One, it brought forth the realization for allies of Canada, for everyone else, the importance and the crucial sort of the core play of domestic politics in American foreign policy. It is extremely important to understand the domestic dynamics, to understand and make sense of where American foreign behavior could go. So that's number one. And we should definitely realize that there are these deep fractures within the American society that are not going to necessarily heal over the next 4 years. And that would continue to shape American behavior abroad. And the second thing, I think, the Trump administration's legacy would be the sort of the dispelling of the myth that the United States would always continue to be the public goods provider for the West. I think not only for Canada, but for our European allies and our allies in East Asia, that became quite obvious that not always American national interests would overlap with the allies' interests, and Americans will not necessarily continue to provide the public goods that we take for granted, including this open, free international trading system, a stable international order, et cetera, et cetera. And regardless of who the president is, that realization that over-reliance on the United States solely as a hegemon to provide these public goods are contrary to our interests, and that we need to be actually playing a bigger role in maintaining the system that we actually benefit as well. So I would say those two are the primary legacies coming out of the Trump administration, that domestic politics are extremely important, and there is a depolarization that is going on within the American society that's not going to go away in the near future. And the second, that, you know, we need to play a big role in maintaining an international order that we actually benefit from, and that the American public goods providing is not necessarily coming back that it was since, say, 1990s.
If you're Canada, how do you try to achieve both those things, which is, you know, resuming cosmetic relationships and working with the Biden administration potentially, while also planning for a future with far less reliance on our neighbors to the south?
Well, that's the hard question. And but I think, I mean, you know, in some sense, geography is destiny. So, you know, United States would continue to be our most important relationship. Our relationship with the U.S. would continue to be the most important one. So that's why I think it's important to figure out mechanisms in which we can work whoever is in White House. And, you know, having someone like Biden that is more, you know, favorably predisposed towards Canada, at least on the surface, makes those things easier. So we will continue to do that. And perhaps trying to carve out some kind of bilateral mechanism with the Americans in this more protectionist and inward-looking era for the United States. So I think in that sense, we have some advantages that we can sort of squeeze in there that may not be possible in a multilateral setting. The other one is that how can we, you know, broaden our set of connections across the board from Europe to Indo-Pacific? And I think we need to take that into account, which countries we can work much closely outside a sort of a trilateral relationship, so with U.S. being involved. So we need to develop a much closer relations with countries like Japan or South Korea or Taiwan. We need to reach out to our European allies more and talk with not only the Brits, but also the Germans and the Scandinavians, and see how we can coordinate on policies where the U.S. shown no interest or may not be playing a sufficiently active role, but are important to us. For example, climate change and other places. So I think we need to talk to our other allies without Americans being present, or not necessarily waiting them to come to the table. And this should go through, you know, all the way from Japan to Germany and the Baltic states.
Let me ask you about the other side of the coin now. You know, it still is officially too close to call. As you mentioned off the top, there will probably be some court challenges in various states. At what point, as that drags on, because as you know, it could be weeks, it could be into December, even if these things go to a high level of the courts. At what point then does the international community, maybe not step in, but begin to comment on what's happening in America, or do they just have to let the whole thing sort itself out and deal with whatever the realities are?
I mean, I think the smart thing would be to let the process sorted out itself and then deal with whatever comes out, for the simple reason that international community basically doesn't have much leverage or at all any leverage in this particular process. There is no way in which pressures from allies would sway the domestic political or the judicial process. So trying to sort of interfere in that process or try to sort of weigh in that process, it's just going to create bad blood if you end up being in the wrong side of things. So, talking without having leverage is basically just talking. And if you end up doing the wrong talk, you will get harmed with that if you end up on the wrong side of things. So I think allies would probably privately urge the respect for the process and all that kind of thing, but publicly should stay as mum as possible without necessarily showing that we are trying to sort of influence the outcome of the court process if it goes there.
What happens if Trump takes this election to the courts and wins a highly contested legal fight? That's one of the scenarios that me and you discussed last time you were on this, and it could get really messy. And if that happens, and if the courts hand it to him, what does that do to America's reputation in the world and the legitimacy of the American electoral process if this goes all the way to the Supreme Court and then the newly appointed judge rules in Trump's favor?
I think that's, for us and for the world, that's sort of a process, an outcome that is determined by a very contentious and highly controversial judicial process will be the worst, to be honest. I would rather have a clean winner through the regular electoral process that does not include the courts, whether it's Biden or Trump, over to a process that heavily involves the court and the Supreme Court, perhaps, that results with a particular winner that will not be seen as legitimate by almost half of the population. It would be terrible for, I think, American standing in the international system. I think it would be terrible for the continuing polarization within the United States. Frankly, ensuring that half of the population, the losing side, do not see the incumbent president as legitimate, because they would think that their votes were stolen. And this would be true if it is Biden or if it is Trump that is declared winner. And I think that paralysis would have significant impact in how and to what degree the president can act in the international system or international politics and can focus on those problems. And the allies would go and look at it, well, you know, this is highly controversial. We don't really know whether the president has, you know, popular legitimacy and all that stuff. So that would actually started to worry the allies and how they relate to the United States. So yes, I think that would lead to a big sort of hit on American prestige and standing in the world. But primarily, it would lead to such a political crisis, a legitimacy crisis within the country, that such a turmoil would go on until the next election. I'm not sure what that would look like.
I guess we'll find out in the coming days and weeks, and hopefully not months. But before I let you go, I wanted to ask you, as a super forecaster, were you surprised to see the difference between the polls that were pointing to a quite possible Biden landslide and the results we're getting?
To be frank, right before the election, I put Biden winning 75% and Trump winning 25%. I was suspicious of the sort of the overconfidence in both as my fellow super forecasters that put, you know, a Biden win for about 87% or something. I thought they were actually missing some of the dynamics that we saw today. But again, to be completely honest, I was not expecting the results to be that close in some of the states. I mean, I was expecting that Florida would be very close, but that actually, you know, Trump did win with a sizable margin, I would say, over there, or Ohio, for that matter. So I think I was a bit undervaluing my own skepticism of the process, and I should have paid more attention to, in my case, those possible problems and the correlation of errors across the media and the polling to be more confident in my assessment that Trump has a higher chance.
And finally, based on just what we know right now, again, early Wednesday afternoon, how worried are you about the weeks and months to come before January?
I think if we can sort of sort this out in the next 3 days, and then that if the initial court challenges fails, then, you know, we are sort of relatively confident that this will be sorted out. If it doesn't, and if those court challenges are launched and successful in proceeding within the system, then I think it's a coin toss. And this could stretch out all the way to Supreme Court, and I don't know whether when that will be decided. So I think the next until Friday is the most sort of crucial time to see whether this would stretch out for several weeks or whether we will have a clear result by early next week.
Oh, boy. All right, well, we'll be waiting and watching and, stress eating. Thank you so much, Balkan, for your time today.
Pleasure to be here.
Balkan Devlin of the McDonald Laurier Institute and Good Judgment Incorporated. That was The Big Story. If you need more, we're at thebigstorypodcast.ca. We are on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. We are, of course, in your podcast player, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. Doesn't matter, pick one, we're there. You can also email us, TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. Thanks for listening. Be patient. Take deep breaths. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.